the banking industry, I feel open banking, alternate credit scoring players, and fraud and identity platforms have attracted a lot of interest from investors. We have seen a lot of interest on the asset tokenization space also, and crypto custody platforms, which are a little bit not in so much uncertainty from the regulatory perspective. So those are the sectors which are doing well in terms of the books of investors. And the last one you mentioned, industry. So I think B2B fintech is really hot this year and continues to be hot as we move into the next. And what I mean by B2B fintech is actually, there are two categories into it. One is the tech providers, such as the core banking players, the RegTechs, the fraud prevention platforms who are offering their technology to banks and fintechs. But more importantly, there is a lot of attention given to SMB-focused fintechs because, the macroeconomic challenges that the merchants and small businesses are facing, a lot of governments are looking to provide support to SMBs. And, because every fintech wants to show a profitable business model to their investor today, right? So SMBs are much easier to make money out of rather than consumers because you don't have to spend, $100 to acquire a customer. And you can start monetizing the SMB right from the word go. So I feel SMB focused fintechs have been doing very well.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Heads Talk with me, Elaine Pringle-Schwitter, the podcast where we talk to C-level executives, leaders of institutions, and heads of multinationals. What are the current topics? They talk, we listen.
Can you imagine getting into a business or a market where you actually spend $100 billion plus on a piece of paper?
Are you kidding me?
It was like a frying pan to the head.
I got nothing against CFOs.
It was not just the job of a lifetime, it was the job of 1,000 lifetimes.
My guest today is a globetrotter working across a number of geographies and continents. His experience spanned 15 years across banking, tech, and in particular, the fintech sector. A clear definition of a fintech influencer and thought leader, he has a glowing following across various social media channels, sharing his expert views and knowledge willingly. This is the new series on Heads Talk, where we talk to individuals that are leading the conversations in fintech. But before we get into that, here's a brief message.
FinTech Week London is a week-long celebration of London's innovative fintech scene from 10 until the 14th of June. Get your tickets now for our flagship conference on Thursday the 13th of June at the Park Plaza, Victoria, London. Join us and meet over 1,000 senior decision makers from the leading fintechs, banks, investment firms, regulatory bodies, insurers, and service providers. Get your tickets now on www.fintechweek.london.
Axia is a leading private cloud platform in the Atlassian and Matimos ecosystem, combining intelligent solutions with security and control. Axia's clients profit from digitalization and automation of critical business processes in a cloud and hybrid architecture. 150 staff provide migration, engineering, and support services to over 200 leading organizations in 32 countries.
Heads Talk podcast with your host, Elaine Pringle-Schwitter.
Sanjeev Kumar is the founder and CEO of WhiteSight, one of the premier fintech research firms based in India. Sanjeev collaborates with fintech startups, banking institutions, and venture capital funds to develop fintech strategies and spearhead thought leadership efforts. He pens compelling newsletters diving deep into the future of fintech, the exciting world of Web3, and the wonders of generative AI. Sanjeev's approaching two decades in the financial sector has worked in countries to include the US, the UK, Japan, Singapore, and India. Today, he has a treasure trove of experience, from donning the hat of a product manager to marketing, consulting, and investment banking roles. When not consulting for fintech or authoring research reports, Sanjeev can often be found presenting his insights at fintech conferences to industry professionals or conducting fintech courses for academic scholars. Let's now have a conversation. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Sanjeev to Heads Talk. Delighted to have you here today.
Thanks a lot for having me on the show, Elaine, and for the kind introduction.
You're welcome. Okay, I earmarked you some time ago to have you on the show, so absolutely delighted to have you here today. Pretty fitting for this series, and let's begin with a detailed introduction to your company, WhiteSight, the aims of your organization, the current projects and current priorities. Why did you start this business?
Yeah, that's the good way to start. So let me give you a little bit of backstory. Starting WhiteSight wasn't just a spur of the moment decision. Mm-hmm. It was more like connecting the dots backwards. And in terms of, beginning with the name itself, WhiteSight is a mashup of two words, white spaces and insight. Mm-hmm. And if you look at fintech, almost every fintech had an insight about a white space, which was unserved, underserved, or poorly served. And then they went after that white space with that insight and built unique business models to serve the market. So as you can guess, the entire aim behind setting up WhiteSight is so that we can analyze, evaluate potential opportunities in these white spaces and bring a treasure map with signposts and speed bumps, that is actionable intelligence, to help our clients navigate and claim the prize in those white spaces. So that's the whole intent of setting up WhiteSight. Mm-hmm. Coming to why did I kick it off? During my time at PwC, one thing was very clear to me, that there was this gap in the market, like a big neon sign saying, we need top tier fintech intelligence, but not at the prices at which they are available today. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, hey, I have got a knack for this stuff and I actually enjoy doing it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, your average fintech enthusiast with an above average obsession with insights, mm-hmm. deciding to bring light to the obscure corners of the fintech world.
That's interesting. So what about current projects, current priorities? What's on your mind, Sanjeev?
Yeah, absolutely. So our current projects primarily involve deep dives into AI's role, mm-hmm. Generative and otherwise, mm-hmm. in banking, mm-hmm. emerging trends in embedded finance. Mm-hmm. And finally, the big one that we are working with a lot of clients is setting up open banking and open finance strategy. Mm. In terms of, our geographic focus, when we started back in 2020, it was primarily North America, UK and Europe. Mm-hmm. As they were the epicenter of fintech and to some extent continue to be our core focus in terms of thought leadership and fintech advisory today. Mm-hmm. However, this year in particular, we have made significant headway in emerging markets like Southeast Asia, Middle East, and even smaller countries in Latin America beyond Brazil and Mexico, such as Bolivia and Paraguay. And it's just fascinating to see the leapfrogging of fintechs in these emerging markets, yeah. who are slightly late to join the fintech party, but are witnessing rapid progress in scaling their businesses with the support of regulators and investors and consumers in the local economies.
I think the beauty of for them, they don't have the sort of legacy systems that you tend to have in the European countries or the Americas. That's kind of will hold you back. So I can see the leapfrogging that's happening in those regions, which is interesting, isn't it?
100%.
Yes. Okay, let's get an update on what's going on in the various subsets of fintech and neobanking. Can you give my listeners a brief overview of insurtech, wealthtech, and regtech, or some of the other techs? Though regtech, some will argue that is not fully and solely within fintech, but please give me your thoughts on that. What's an update on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm more inclined to think of fintech as a blend of several themes or undercurrents rather than looking at it from a very traditional way of looking at sectors like regtech, neobanking, wealthtech, digital lending, etc. Mm-hmm. So, I think of themes as, let's call it Marvel superheroes of fintech, right? So each of them come with unique powers, but all of them are fighting the same big daddies of the fintech, of the financial industry, which are inefficiency, outdated mm-hmm. business models, and consumer dissatisfaction. Now, in terms of themes which are driving, you know, sectoral innovation that you mentioned as RegTech, mm-hmm. neobanking, wealth tech, etc., I feel there are six different themes which are, you know, acting as a foundational pillar to what's happening in the fintech that everyone gets to see.
Mm-hmm.
So these six themes are, in my opinion, open finance, digital finance, embedded finance,
mm-hmm.
fintech infrastructure, green finance, mm-hmm. and finally, the one which is going through tough times is decentralized finance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So let me break it down to you Avenger style. So think of open finance as Captain America of the group, leading the charge for transparency and accessibility in financial data. Digital finance, to my mind, is Iron Man, tech savvy, slick, transforming the way we manage our money with just a few taps on a screen. And you can call it neobanking, BNPL, all of them kind of leverage both open finance and digital finance. Embedded finance to me is like Ant-Man, you know, popping up where you least expect it, seamlessly integrating financial services into non-financial platforms. Fintech infrastructure to me is like Thor, the backbone of fintech with very robust platforms and systems that power the whole ecosystem. Then the other ones that we have is green finance. So green finance is to me is like Groot. It's about using financial muscles for good, supporting sustainable and eco-friendly initiatives in the banking industry. And finally, decentralized finance is to me like a Spider-Man, swinging into the financial world with peer-to-peer systems that cut out the middleman. So there you have it, the way I look at fintech and how all these six themes are coming together to drive a unique sector-level innovation that you touched upon.
I hope you've set this up as some kind of education training aid, because that's such a fantastic description of the different arms of finance and fintech. I assume this is not the first time people will be hearing this. You've set this up surely as an education aid.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's so many jargons in the fintech world and in the financial industry world that sometimes it becomes very difficult to associate what is being said and what is meant by that word. Yes. Or the phrase. So I always, whenever I speak to either my client or my peers or my, you know, session attendants, I try to bring it to ground so that they can actually paint a picture in their mind that, okay, this is what this is. And once they go back, it sticks. So yes. That's how yes. I treat my audience.
Yes, yes it does. Because now I've got Spider-Man as DeFi, which is brilliant in my head. Excellent. You touched upon it briefly when we talked about OpenAI and generative AI. How has that changed the whole game around fintech?
No, absolutely. So continuing, you know, the Marvel theory forward,
mm-hmm.
generative AI to me is like Doctor Strange. You know, bending reality, creating things out of thin air, and seriously, it's a game-changing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take you know what generative AI is doing with the other themes that I mentioned to you. Starting off with open finance. So if you look at generative AI, it's not just about opening up data anymore. It's about opening up a new whole dimension of customized and personalized banking experiences. And if you think about why open banking has been slow in gaining adoption in certain economies, it's because banks have been really struggling to find a way to create value for themselves as well as for their customers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is where I think GenAI can gain a lot of ground very quickly in moving the needle on open banking and open finance. Because with GenAI, banks and fintechs, both of them would have a very, suitable technology to turn unstructured data into actionable insights, which has been a struggle for the financial industries
mm.
for years, if not decades, right?
Mm-hmm.
So That's one of the underlying themes that I think will play out, that how Gen AI will really unlock value of open banking and open finance.
That's excellent. Carry on. Carry on. Carry on, please, Sanjay.
Digital banking and digital finance is the other one where I feel, traditional financial institutions and even the bigger fintechs, they struggle a lot with managing their employee knowledge, right? And large banks are still struggling with siloed structure, which results in siloed data, and the problems get worsened by legacy tech that they have, right? And this is where generative AI can help by processing vast amount of internal data and promptly delivering information to employees who need it, either for an internal activity or an engagement with an external customer or partner. So those are the two links that I see where generative AI is really going to deliver in the short to middle term. And then you see, the opportunity to change customer experience on a vast scale is there. But, given the safety, security, and even regulatory compliance angle kicking in my opinion, the internal use cases of employee productivity and generating value through open banking data should be the ones that banks and fintechs will focus on.
That's interesting. And sticking with this technology, you talked about the six parts, and you didn't sort of elaborate on sort of embedded finance or DeFi, etc. But who would you say is missing out? Who's not really benefiting from this new wave of technology?
So I don't think anyone is missing out, but some sectors and some players are slower than others. You can decide to be an innovator and burn your fingers, or you can decide to be a fast follower, or you can decide to be in a wait and watch mode. So that is where the industry is today. More specifically about Gen AI, what I am seeing in the market is, this is one technology which has gained adoption at scale rather quickly, right? In a matter of, I don't know, 9 to 12 months, almost everyone is talking about Gen AI. Your consumer, your employees, regulators, investors, come what, right? So what I'm seeing in the market is everyone is talking about it, but in terms of implementations, there are, some bigger firms who have been off the blocks to get it implemented, like BNPL companies or some of the digital banks have implemented it. What I see that the opportunity of Gen AI is huge in scenarios where B2B companies come into play, right? So let's an enterprise customer getting served by a multi-country bank, because the data privacy is not an issue there, right? Because it's a closed environment. And that is where I feel that these are the sectors which are slow to realize the value that Gen AI can bring to the table. Similarly, if you look at traditional core platforms or incumbent payment processing platform, they also deal with a lot of structured as well as unstructured data. But I have not come across, any of the initiatives around Gen AI from these players. So I would say opportunities are abound, especially for these sector of players, owing to their access to massive amounts of data. And as you know, Gen AI has a requirement of, I don't know, terabytes or petabytes of data before it can deliver value to you. So I would say these are the players who are probably a little slower to get started, but Gen AI can really deliver a lot of tangible value for them if they do.
Okay, thanks for that. I'd say in your line of work, you're sort of actively liaising with the traditional banks as well as sort of the new brand of finance management. Let's look at the sort of the old banking institutions. You talked about the silo structures that still exist. What current conversations are you having with them regarding a sort of a competitive advantage with this new tech development and deployment? You said a lot of them are not deploying it, but what conversations are you having with them about it? Is it a case of they're not fully sure about how they can optimize its use, or what is it? You tell me, Sanjeev.
So with banks, what always stops them is primarily two things. One, Their existing technology infrastructure, because you know, the moment you talk about a banking infrastructure, you have to tick off a lot of boxes before you can even get into their internal technology infrastructure. And the second one is their hesitance on the regulatory front, right? So if you see the North American market and even the UK and European market, regulators are in a different mode today, right? There's a lot of sanctions, there's a lot of consent orders flying around, which I think gives a lot of hiccups to adoption of new technology like GenAI. And if you know, there was an executive order signed by President of the United States a couple of days back on AI and how to ensure safety and compliance, etc. So I think a lot of uncertainty from the regulatory and government policy, which is acting as a roadblock for banks to really go big on these on this technology. But I think we will get a lot of clarity in the coming year, as regulators have already started to draft at least guidelines on how to approach adoption of this technology.
I'm sensing there's a downturn in fintech investment, maybe just in the US and Europe, especially in recent months. I may be wrong. So Sanjeev, tell me, what does the investment landscape look like at the moment in fintech and the various subsets? And where is the focus the most? Meaning, could it be in a geographical region? You talked about South America quite a bit, service lines, technology, industry. Enlighten me and my listeners.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So you're right. The European market and the UK market, to some extent, are witnessing a lot of downturn if you compare it with what happened in 2021 and till mid of 2022. In terms of focus, where fintech has been sustaining or even gaining ground in terms of, you know, attracting investment, I would say Latin America, of course, is number one. But apart from Latin America, we have seen a lot of traction in the Middle East as well as in Southeast Asia. So countries like Indonesia, Philippines, Vietnam, they are doing very well. Middle Eastern countries, especially Saudi, UAE, Bahrain, all of these countries are really good in terms of giving regulatory support, setting up fintech policy, to, you know, A, attract talent from outside the region, and B, attract investors from outside the region to build a fintech ecosystem. So in terms of geography, I would say those are the regions which are doing really well. Coming to service lines, I have seen a lot of activity in the payment space, particularly payment infrastructure. InsurTech is really hot, given that there's a lot of consumer awareness coming out of COVID among, you know, normal retail consumers, but also among employees and gig workers. And there's a lot of focus by governments in different countries, specifically on you know, protecting gig workers who are, you know, working in ride-hailing platforms, food delivery platforms, and all that. The other one that we have seen a lot of traction is actually wealth tech. Because of the high interest rate environment that we are currently living in, there's a lot of focus on how do you, you know, bring wealth to mass affluent customer segments. Coming to technology, I would say apart from GenAI, which of course is attracting a lot of funding, in the banking industry, I feel open banking, alternate credit scoring players, and fraud and identity platforms have attracted a lot of interest from investors. We have seen a lot of interest on the asset tokenization space also, and crypto custody platforms, which are a little bit not in so much uncertainty from the regulatory perspective. So those are the sectors which are doing well in terms of the books of investors. And the last one, you mentioned industry. So I think B2B fintech is really hot this year and continues to be hot as we move into the next. And what I mean by B2B fintech is actually, you know, there are two categories into it. One is the tech providers such as the core banking players, the regtechs, the fraud prevention platforms, mm-hmm. who are offering their technology to banks and fintechs. But more importantly, there is a lot of attention given to SMB-focused fintechs, mm-hmm. because, you know, the macroeconomic challenges that the merchants and small businesses mm-hmm. are facing, mm-hmm. a lot of governments are looking to provide support to SMBs. And, you know, because every fintech wants to show a profitable business model to their investor today, right? So SMBs are much easier to make money out of rather than consumers, because you, mm-hmm. you don't have to spend, you know, $100 to acquire a customer. Mm-hmm. And you can start monetizing the SMB right from the word go. So mm-hmm. I feel SMB-focused fintechs have been doing very well.
That's good. And another question about conversations you were having behind the scenes, and I think it'd be interesting to hear your answers for this, because you're sort of in a prime position to have the, you know, they will have your ear and you'll hear their voice. And I just think, what are VCs talking to you about, and what are startups saying about the current fintech climate? And importantly, in terms of these dialogues you're having, where do they not have a meeting of minds in this dialogue? Where are both of them talking sort of at two different and never meeting? I mean, I think you're in sort of a prime position to hear this.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's sometimes very difficult to be a witness to these kind of conversations. Especially because of what I witnessed in 2021 and 2022, it is completely opposite of mm-hmm. how the investors are talking about. So picture this, you know, a Venn diagram. On one side, you have visionary product, cool tech, lucrative TAM. And on the other side, you have demand for sustainable and profitable business model, right? Mm-hmm. And that middle slice where they intersect and overlap in current times is, I would say, it's as thin as a runway model during a fashion week. So it just is a very difficult conversation that VCs and startup founders are having. Mm-hmm. VCs are just peppering founders with questions about sustainability, scalability, profitability, mm-hmm. right from the word go, right? And it's like, you know, they are overcompensating for the issues that they have witnessed because of what happened in the last 18 months and what they are witnessing in terms of their portfolio value going down. Mm-hmm. So they're looking to just get to the end game without having to be in a situation where that they're judging the business model mm-hmm. and the technology stack in a very open manner. So that is where I see, especially in Series A and above discussions, yeah. these are very difficult conversations because, you know, these are not like founders who haven't found a product market fit and they have not invested enough, you know, resources in terms of their own time. Mm-hmm. And this is where the contrast between what VCs want and what founders are ready to deliver mm-hmm. is very contrasting. And, you know, there are some segments, as I mentioned, for example, technology infrastructure, yes, that they are doing well. Yeah. SMB fintech, they are going well. But for example, let's say in 2021, Neobank Forex, right? The moment you tell it, you show a TAM of $100 million, you get funding. Today, that conversation has a tree of questions. Okay, you're saying $100 million TAM. How much you need to spend to get there? What is the regulatory side? Who are your partners? How does your unit economics improve with every, you know, new cohort of customer that you acquire? So I think the questions have gotten a lot more deeper and granular. And that is where I feel there's a lot of challenges that startup founders are facing.
They're more cautious because of what?
So because of, you know, a lot of investors have found that once the startup founders commit their business model and go-to-market strategy, a lot of external factors have come into play. For example, if you see in the US, a lot of banking-as-a-service players have either, you know, being cut off by their sponsor banks or are under intense regulatory scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
And these external events have thrown the business plan out of the window, right? As
mm-hmm.
You know, the moment you get punched in the face, everything is off.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that has been, you know, woken up investors
mm-hmm.
that, okay, you have a plan that is fine, but we have witnessed in the last 12 to 18 months, a lot of external events coming together to bring a very unfavorable environment for fintech business models.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where there's a lot of confusion that we keep hearing about.
Right. And just briefly, some of these external events are sort of geopolitical?
Some of it definitely is. In fact, you know, I was talking to one of our clients, and as you know, Israel is like
mm-hmm.
the hotbed of innovation, and a lot of technology companies operate out of there,
mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, firms who are in the identity, fraud, data
mm-hmm.
intelligence kind of stuff. So it has really thrown off a lot of you know, players who are dependent on these markets where something is not right, geopolitically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it was the same story last year also because of
yeah.
Ukraine being a talent hub to a lot of companies in Europe.
Yeah.
And we have seen that affecting the fintech market terribly.
Yeah, nobody likes uncertainty, so totally understand what's going on here. Okay, let's look at social media for this question. Apart from the buzz around OpenAI, generative AI, we've talked quite a bit about that. What else is new and disrupting fintech, or a subset of it? I mean, what's currently being talked about on forums such as LinkedIn? I mean, listeners, Sanjeev has got a heavy following on LinkedIn, and I will put in the show notes his details, social media links, so that you can follow him directly. But Sanjeev, tell me, what's the hot topics, apart from what we talked about with OpenAI and generative AI? What are the things? And apart from the all sort of six superhero information, what else is really disrupting fintech?
I think the biggest one this year has been embedded finance.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where, you know, think of it like fintech 1.0 was driven by smaller fintechs and neo banks who were operating in partnership with those smaller fintechs.
Mm-hmm.
This year, what we have seen is two things have changed, right? So the smaller fintechs are being increasingly replaced by bigger banks because they have realized the potential of embedded finance and everyone wants to get a piece of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
So we have seen, you know, big four, big five banks in every geography doing something or the other in embedded finance, either by setting up a banking as a service stack or forging partnerships and launching new products, etc.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that has changed in the embedded finance value chain is participation from bigger non-bank and retail brands, right? So think of your favorite retailers, ride-sharing apps, even social media platforms morphing into financial hubs.
Mm-hmm.
That is the biggest story for me, which has come out this year,
mm-hmm.
Which All is right. just, you know, leading the fintech industry into a different direction.
So embedded finance. Okay. I've never asked this question before on Heads Talk, particularly because I'm really not a fan of it. But today I will break this rule and ask you, probably because of the nature of this kind of conversation we're having, who influences you in fintech and banking and why?
Oh, yeah, a lot of people. You know, given the community, especially in fintech, is very close-knit and very supportive, I would say, especially,
mm-hmm.
you know, when we started Whiteside, at least our first three customers came from direct reference from the community,
mm-hmm.
where there was no commercial incentive that I gave to those people,
mm-hmm.
But still sent client to our way. But when it comes to, you know, really good industry experts who I tend to follow and take inspirations from, I think two names come to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
One is Nigel Morris and the other is Matt Harris. Both of them are very successful investors. But, you know, let's start with Nigel Morris, right? So the man's practically a fintech wizard. co-founder of Capital One. He's someone who reshaped the credit industry. And then he went ahead and set up QED Investors, where he's got his fingerprints on a slew of fintech startups like Nubank and several others. So I do look at him and his posts and his speeches, mm-hmm. his webinars, etc. whenever you know, it comes about.
Mm-hmm.
About Matt Harris, what I like about him is you know, when he talks about fintech, it's like sitting in on a masterclass. He's all about the long game, investing in companies that are in it to revolutionize financial services rather than just becoming a unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
So following these two is like having a constant stream of aha moments.
Yeah.
You know, they're not just influencing the market. They are teaching us how to read between the lines understand the why behind the what of the fintech world.
Yeah, I think that's a real influencer, is when they make you think, aha, I didn't know this, and it makes you yearn for more and more, make them feel like they're insatiable. You just want to sort of feed off them in terms of their knowledge. So I totally understand that. Okay, with this final question on Heads Talk, and with your extensive knowledge, I ask, if we were to have a conversation next year, Sanjeev, about trends in fintech, what do you think we'll be talking about? And then what exactly will be trending, or what are the hot topics of the day, do you think?
Yeah, the crystal ball question at last. Yeah. So you know, I've got a strong hunch that big tech's tango with fintech will be leading the headlines in 2024. And what I mean by that is not just from the angle of big tech's introducing financial products, but also from the angle of regulatory stance on their increased participation in the financial industry, right?
Hmm.
So if you look at 2023, right? So Apple has made a lot of moves in the US and even beyond. Google, WhatsApp, and Amazon have doubled down on their fintech initiatives in emerging markets like Asia and Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Google is cozying up with a lot of wallet payment systems. WhatsApp is turning chats into transactions. Amazon is building two-sided ecosystems to serve both merchants and consumers.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that will be a big story next year, given that regulatory clarity will
yeah.
give us more clarity on how they participate. Mm-hmm. But to me, you know, the wild card is Mr. Musk.
Yes.
And, you know, yeah, he's the moonshot guy, right? And they have been collecting a lot of licenses lately. And with the treasure trove of data that X has, we might just be talking about how they are launching something that can rewire the financial universe.
There is a lot of talk about that. Him converting X, formerly Twitter, into like potentially the biggest fintech company that we know. So it's a wait and see. I was thinking about him, so I'm glad you've mentioned that, actually, Sanjeev. Sanjeev Kumar, just a delightful conversation. Many thanks for your time and insights.
Thanks a lot, Elin. Wonderful talking to you.
Thanks for joining me today on this episode of Heads Talk. Don't forget to subscribe to the show via my website, elainepringle.com/headstalk, or wherever you get your podcasts. Finally, I'd like to thank our sponsors, guests, and you for helping to make the show possible. Please join me next time, where I'll be featuring more executives, C-suite leaders, and heads of multinationals.
Heads Talk podcast with your host, Elaine Pringle-Schwitter.